If you grew up in a religious home, somebody probably taught you how to pray. And we can remember, at least I can remember when I was growing up, that part of that prayer is what you see in the introduction. It says, I would often say, bless mommy and daddy, grandma and grandpa, my doll and my dog, whatever it may be that you might be praying for. I don't think I prayed for my doll to get blessed, but that was back in the old days before we became so enlightened. You know. But it is something that I said all the time. And we've been talking about what it means to be blessed by God. This is the second lesson on this particular lesson, an idea. And I think when I said what I said back there in that prayer, I don't think I really understood what I was saying when I said, bless mommy and daddy. I don't think I had much of an idea, other than probably that I figured I was saying something good. You know, somebody told me to say it, so I said it, and I was probably saying something that certainly wasn't intended to hurt them. But of course, as is the case in most things, so just like when you're a younger Christian, you know some stuff and then you learn a lot more, or you get to the depth of things a whole lot more as time goes on. Well, I've come to understand a little bit more about what it means to bless and to be blessed. And I wanted to share that with you in an effort for us to understand how we are to use that term. It is, as we've said, you know, we use it often. We thank God for our blessings. We ask a blessing when we, sometimes we do get, some people say give thanks. Some people say, would you ask a blessing? When someone sneezes, we say, God bless you. We say, have a blessed day. There's all kinds of ways that we use the phrase. Well, if we're going to use it so much, and we don't want to make it cliche, I think it's probably worthwhile trying to understand what it is we're saying when we're saying anything regarding God blessing someone or hoping that God will bless us. The definition we looked at last time was based on the whole idea of bestowing prosperity and goodness. If you bless someone, that's part of the idea, to bless them with good times, if you will. Or to worship God as good. It would be saying something to God. We pointed out that it's not just a matter of our receiving blessings. We are to extend blessings as well. And we have many occasions in the Old and New Testament where people bless God. Now, the way we generally do that, we usually don't say, God, we bless you. We bless you, God, because of your greatness. We generally say we praise you or we give thanks. And so over the years, we've become rather comfortable using that kind of terminology. It's very unusual to hear someone actually say, God, I bless you. There's almost, I think, in our mind, something wrong with that. Because, again, we have this rather incorrect perception that God's the one who does all the blessing. That he's the one who provides this wish for prosperity or happiness resulting from such being bestowed. So understanding that to be true, we thought, well, if it's something that I'm supposed to do, it's not something that I just thank God for, or it's not something I desire of God to be blessed, I think it behooves us to try to understand what it means. If you'll notice there in the outline, I said one of the things that I think is important that being blessed by God represents a connection with him. One of the things that we understand about our relationship with God, it's built upon his covenant with us and then our response to that covenant. Sometimes we call it obedience, sometimes we call it a response. But nevertheless, we're in a relationship with him. And I think what you see when you read about people being blessed or God bestowing his blessing upon them, there is a relationship that God desires with those people. And blessing is almost always connected with obedience. It's not always true. We pointed out that there are things that come to all of us as a result of being created by God. And so when we're talking about the things that we have in this life, the world in which we live, I think we would all consider it a good thing or a blessing. Then we realize that that's something that's not built upon necessarily my relationship with God, other than the fact that I'm a created being. But the blessings that I think we all desire are built upon a relationship with God. Knowing who God is and then knowing God well enough to know that this is what God expects of me, or at least trying to learn all the time what that means. You just can't separate it. We point out an example from the Old Testament where we saw where the people of Israel were given the choice. God said, when you come out of the land of Egypt, you know, if you follow me, if you obey me, I will bless you. If you don't, I will pronounce my woes upon you, or I will curse you. In the New Testament, we saw the same thing when Jesus gave us the Beatitudes. He explained to us what and how it means to be blessed. We'll talk a little bit more about that today. But he goes on in chapter 6 to say, well, if you want to be a part of that blessing, well, then here's how you react. Here's how you respond. He talks about giving and prayer and fasting and all different facets of what might have been something that people understood to be the stuff you do if you're in a relationship with God. So that's what we talked about last week. I'm going to look at some of these examples that are found in the Old Testament. You'll notice in the outline, I tell you that there are 45 Beatitudes in the Old Testament, and 26 of them are found in the book of Psalms. Now, when we usually think of Beatitudes, we think of the Beatitudes of Matthew chapter 5. And if they happen to show up in the Gospels other than Matthew, then we would include them. But for the most part, when you think of the Beatitudes, you think of Matthew chapter 5. I certainly do. And when we think of Beatitudes, we think that because that title was given to it, somebody put it in there, it's not from God. If it's there, then those are the Beatitudes. Well, what was a Beatitude? Well, it was a word or a phrase that included the idea of being blessed by God. Blessed are you if you, and then fill in the blank. So we realize that that's true in Matthew chapter 5, that those are phrases very similar to what I just said. Maybe not exactly what we might think is a blessing from God, but nevertheless, that's what it is. And so when we made this connection, really between trying to understand what it means to be blessed, you can't really stop there at the Beatitudes that are found in Matthew, I mean, to understand the fullness of it, because a lot of times we understand things a little bit better in the New Testament by understanding the Old Testament. Well, there were Beatitudes, or bless, you will be blessed if you do something, if you act a certain way, if you think a certain way. This is very much a part of the way God related to his people. And as I said, there are 45 of them. 26 of them are found in the book of Psalms. Now, when we look at some of the Psalms, we look at who are the kind of people that are blessed in these blessings or these Beatitudes that are found in the book of Psalms. One of them says, how blessed are the people who are so situated or in such a place. How blessed are the people whose God is the Lord. Whose God, the God of all, and who is the Lord Jehovah. Who have this relationship with him. How blessed are you if he is the one who is the person, the personage in your life from whom you get what it is you find definition in life. Now, so when we look at this particular blessing, the one that's found in Psalm 144, it's pretty clear that a person who is blessed by God considers him his Lord. Now, right there, you know, ought to tell us that, you know, not everybody receives the greatest blessings of God or is allowed in the fullness to understand the greatness of God, because the way that happens is if, as we said there, if we recognize God as the Lord. He is the one who seeks to connect with us, to have a relationship with us. So again, you know, we may ask a blessing upon someone who is not a believer, and God may respond to us favorably in that regard. But for a non-believer to state, you know, God, please bless me, it doesn't really even make a whole lot of sense. Now, as we pointed out last week, as a matter of practicality, mostly religious people use the idea of blessing. You would never hear a secularist or an atheist or someone talking about how it's great that we get blessings in life, because they understand the way the term is used, at least most of them. There's that, you know, when people are talking about being blessed, they're thinking about some God who's out there that they desire to have some sort of relationship. They don't desire to do that. So they might call it luck, or they might call it good fortune. They might call it all kinds of things. But understand, in order to be blessed by God, God explained to the people of Israel here's how you can be blessed by me. Blessed are those who fear the Lord. Praise the Lord. How blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments. His descendants will be mighty on earth. The generations of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches are in his house, and his righteousness endures forever. There is this promise to you and to me that if we are fearful of the Lord, we respect, we revere the Lord, out of that comes a sense of wellness in life. Now, we're going to see, and we know this for a fact, that doesn't mean that if you're being blessed by God. And I might add to you that when we're talking about being blessed by God, we're really not talking about something miraculous. I can't really find in the scriptures where God or Jesus is blessing someone and some sort of miracle occurs, unless it's associated with the blessing and maybe the fact that he just did a miracle and then it says something there about his giving them a blessing. So it's generally something that I think most of us, when we say, God, thank you for our blessings, or bless us, God, most of us understand that we're talking about God providing things in this life in a non-miraculous way as a part of the way God provides things for everyone. But there's a special relationship. There's a special sense of being blessed, being in a relationship with God where God speaks good things about us, and it's built upon these principles. We are blessed if we fear and we revere the Lord. Another passage on that subject. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy and it will be well with you. Your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, your children like olive plants around your table. Behold, thus shall the man be blessed who fears the Lord. Now, so there, you can see there's some things there that are somewhat poetic, you know, in nature. And so when we read about those things, you know, we begin to think, well, wait a minute, does this mean you're going to have, you know, a great marriage? Well, it might mean that if you are continually prioritizing the things that God wants you to do, so that when you're acting as a husband, that you will act in such a way that it will allow and encourage your wife to be the kind of wife that you would like for her to be, I suspect and I hope, but the kind of wife that God wants. It will create the kind of children. He says, your children are like olive plants. Doesn't mean they are literally olive plants, but something good, something bountiful. So in understanding the idea of what it means to be blessed by God, it is understanding that it comes to people who fear the Lord. Now, this is, I think, something you and I are going to see, and I think it's something that we have to face when understanding how we use this term. Now, I don't necessarily think that I'm going to get you out of the habit of using it the way you use it, because I know those kinds of habits are hard to break. And in some ways, I don't know that it really makes that much difference. You know, so if someone sneezes and you say, God bless you, I don't think anything awful has been done as a result of that. But I hope at least that you start thinking about what you mean when you ask God to bless someone. And try to do it as we often try to do here. Okay, if we're going to do it, let's try to do it biblically and understand what it means in the scriptures. Those who take refuge in God are blessed. So doesn't that mean, doesn't it make sense to you that if you aren't taking refuge in God, you're certainly not blessed by God as a result of that. Oh, the raiment and sun may come upon you, and you may have a life that is somewhat pleasant, but that's not receiving the blessing of God. You can have a somewhat pleasant life without having a relationship with God. You and I would probably conclude that it's probably superficial, and it's built upon materialism and all that, but the point is, it's possible to have a reasonably good life, but not be blessed by God, because those who are blessed by God are a given category. The ones who fear God, the ones who take refuge in him, the ones who trust him. O Lord of hosts, how blessed is the man who trusts in you. Do homage to the Son, that he not become angry. This is from Psalm 2, where it's a messianic prophecy. The Son probably referring there to at least a king coming or to the coming of Christ. He says, for his wrath soon will be kindled. How blessed are those who take refuge in him. So if you're here and you're not a believer in Christ, I want you to think a lot about what it is that we are trying to get across here. If you want to be blessed by God, I want you to understand it's just not a matter of your asking for it. It's not a matter of someone asking that someone, that God bless you. In order to be truly blessed by God, to where God sees you in the light that I think most persons who certainly believe in the Bible want to be seen, it's going to take something on your part. There is a response that God requires of you, requires of me. How blessed are those whose way is blameless, who walk in the law of the Lord. How blessed are those who observe his testimonies, who seek him with all their heart. Again, Old Testament concepts, but certainly these are somewhat universal when one gets over to the New Testament. The idea of observing God's laws, the idea of walking in God's laws, is not something that is foreign to understanding the New Testament. Now, Jesus came along, he fulfilled the things that were found in the Old Testament regarding messianic prophecy, but he gave to his apostles the things that taught me and you how we could walk in his ways, how we could stand in his truth. And Peter wrote about the importance of that, Paul wrote about the importance of it, and the other writers did as well. Now, there are, on the other hand, something I've already spoken about, and that is what I call these predictable blessings, or things that are somewhat figuratively stated. Now, we already read about one there in one of the earlier Psalms, but we'll go ahead and look at a few of these. And what I'm talking about here is there's the way this term is used, I believe, is used in a way which is more figurative than looking at it in a very straightforward, literal sort of way. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. They will not be ashamed when they speak with their enemies in the gate. Now, here it's saying, if you are, in this particular case, a male, if you are one who has a lot of children, a lot of arrows in your quiver, then that means that something good has happened to you. Now, you have been blessed with children in a very natural sort of way, I guess, within the natural scheme of things. And, of course, that's something that happens to all kinds of people. It doesn't just happen to believers. But he's saying that if you put your right focus and you do put maybe those things that we've already mentioned, then you're going to be able to experience these things in a much more deep and special way than other people. But you could look at that and say, well, boy, is there something wrong with me? I don't have any children. Does it mean I'm not blessed by God? No, it's just saying, given these circumstances, give thanks for what you got. You have been blessed. And something good can come out of that. He says in 128, how blessed is everyone who fears the Lord. This is going to sound familiar. It's an earlier passage. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hand, you will be happy and it will be well with you. And it goes on to talk about his family. Again, does that mean that if you are blessed by God, that means that bad things are not going to happen to you, or disappointing things are not going to happen to you, or that you're not going to experience suffering if you're blessed by God? Well, when a person is wrapped up in worship and saying the kind of things that the psalmist is here, you know, I guess it's possible that you might get that impression. But we know that that's not true. So we see here a figurative statement here, which is saying, boy, you know, if you fear the Lord, good things will come. Good things will come. But as we've noted in Psalm 73 on more than a few occasions, that was the great frustration of Asaph when he wrote Psalm 73, because his conclusion was that it wasn't always that way. And that it seems like the good guys aren't doing so great. They're being punished, or life is difficult for them. And the wicked guys seem to be winning. So it doesn't always happen that way, but generally speaking, when one is praising God and looking at the great things that he or she experiences, we see these things as a blessing for us. But just because it doesn't work out quite the way we want it to work out. Our children are troublesome. We certainly read of a lot of families in the Old Testament who had troublesome children. Did it necessarily mean that fearing the Lord was the cause of it? The lack of fearing of the Lord, of the parents? Or do the children, as they grow up, have to take some responsibility? I don't think anybody would argue with that. Those who avoid evil will delight in his law and trust. How blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, nor stand in the path of sinners, nor sit in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the Lord, the law of the Lord, and his law he meditates day and night. I mean, it's a great thing to not follow the tenets or teachings of the wicked. But of course, the thing is, what happens as a result of that? Well, if you look at that, how blessed is the man who trusts you? Isn't the person who's not walking in the counsel of the wicked, not standing in the path of sinners? Does it stand to reason that as he's delighting in the law of the Lord, that everything's going to go well for him? Again, Psalm 73, go and read it and find out, because it's not the only psalm that teaches this principle. And the book of Job is much about that, isn't it? It's this view that somehow, if I'm good, good things must happen to me. Job had bad things happen to him. Therefore, Job, it must be because of you. And even Job doesn't come to that conclusion with the help of God. It's those who live under God's protection. The Lord will protect him and keep him alive. He shall be called blessed upon the earth. And do not give him over to the desire of the enemy. So do you get that? I mean, God protects us. But how often do we wonder why he's not protecting us to the extent that we would like for him to protect us? And those things that happen in life that just don't seem right and just don't seem fair. Why did that happen to us? It just doesn't seem right. We serve God. We try to be faithful to God, and yet we have some awful thing come to us. So maybe being protected by God is not just being protected from the physical things that can happen, but if we continue to trust in him, we certainly find the due protection for our hearts and for our souls, no matter what else happens in our lives. What a great blessing that is, knowing that God is going to take care of us. Notice what Job was saying about his life and how people looked at his life. He's talking about himself here. This is Job speaking. The voice of the nobles was hushed and their tongue stuck to their palate. This was when he just walked in the room. When the ear heard, it called me blessed. When the eye saw, it gave witness of me. Well, why is that? Well, because I delivered the poor who cried for help and the orphan who had no helper. The blessing of the one ready to perish came upon me. And I made the widow's heart sing for joy. Now, Job is trying to explain to the guys who are sitting down there talking to him why your very straightforward view of the world, that bad things happen to bad people and good things happen to good people, isn't true. He says, I'm an example of that. And that's what people thought of me. I mean, when they saw me, they saw a great guy. People were in awe of me. So what was that? Was it wrong? Were they all wrong about me? He says, I don't think so. Look at the kind of things that were a part of my life. So there are things that happen sometimes to us, even though we're blessed in ways, and God says that we are blessed for being in this relationship with him, it doesn't mean that these awful things, disappointing things, that are all a part of life. Most of us know if you live long enough, you're going to suffer great disappointment and tragedy in life. It really cannot be avoided. But does that mean it's not a great thing to trust in the Lord? Does that mean it's not a great thing to fear the Lord? Job never says, well, this was a bad thing, being the kind of person that I was. He was just saying, I just don't know that I can understand this. And he had the guys around him who were encouraging him to think the same way. But eventually, by the end of Job, you know, he comes to the conclusion. Now, think about this idea of understanding that being blessed by God does not mean that things are going to always go right for us. And I think in theory, we all understand that. The problem is when it comes. And we have a hard time wondering why this has happened to me. We have a difficult time being philosophical about it and understanding, you know, these are the kinds of things that happen. This is the life that God has given to us. But we pray God to bless us, and look what's happened. Well, I just want you to understand, as we look at a couple of these examples here, that even when God blesses you or is providing a blessing, that doesn't mean that life is not going to have those tough waters through which you have to wade. The great blessing that was given to Abraham, or Abram in Genesis chapter 12, God said to him, I will make you a great nation, I will bless you, and I will make your name great, so you shall be a blessing. That's pretty good news. And I will bless those who bless you. It's even better news. And the ones who curses you, I will curse. And in all you, all the families of the earth will be blessed. Now, I'm not sure what Abram thought at that moment when he got this from God. But I'm guessing that he's thinking, you know, you cannot be in a better place than I am right now with this incredible blessing that God has given me. But out of this promise of the blessing that out of his family is going to come a great family, which is going to become a nation, something had to happen. He had to have a son. He had to have one. But as you have read the story, you know the son didn't come along at the pace that Abram and Sarah wanted it to come. It didn't change the fact that God had blessed him. But here God is restating this blessing in Genesis chapter 15 and verse 5. So frustrated, he offered to God, he said, God, I don't have a son, but I got this great servant named Eliezer. Take him, make him the heir. Here's what God said. He says, look toward the heavens and count the stars, if you are able to count them. And he said to him, so shall your descendants be. Then he believed in the Lord, and he reckoned it to him as righteousness. The blessing was still there, but life was not going in a way that made Abram feel that this is the way it was supposed to go. So much so that, yes, God has provided a great blessing so that we will be blessed, will be great things for somebody, for the whole world, but I have to have a son and I don't have one. So time went on. Genesis chapter 17. He takes it to the next step. Sarah still can't have a son, and so she is given a handmaiden through which a child comes. I mean, in Abram's mind, I mean, how are we going to be blessed? He's Abraham by this point. How are we going to be blessed if we don't have what we think we should have? How are we going to be blessed if it's not coming at the pace that I want it to come? See, he's still blessed. But life is not what he wants it to be. Notice the next slide, Genesis chapter 17. This is again after they had provided for themselves in his mind through a lady named Hagar, a son named Ishmael. Why not let him provide for me the blessing? God says to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her name Sarai anymore, but Sarah she shall be your name. I will bless her, and indeed, I will give you a son by her. Then I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations, the kings of people will come from her. Then Abraham fell on his face and laughed and said in his heart, even at this point, God is saying to him, I've got the blessing coming. But he's still got this battle. So he says, will a child be born to a man 100 years old, and will Sarah, who is 90 years old, bear a child? Abraham said then to God, oh, that Ishmael might live before you. But here's God's answer. No, Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son. I mean, the promise was you and Sarah are going to have a son so this family can come out of it. He says, I'm even going to give you a name. You should call his name Isaac, and I will establish my covenant with him for an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. So do you get what's happening here? At least the point that I'm trying to make. And that is, even when we are blessed by God, and that is the promise of good things that are going to come to us, that are going to be a part of our life. Of course, we got to learn what's good and what's not so good. We got to learn to distinguish with it, not be confused sometimes with what blessing actually is. We may get all caught up in the idea of the material side of it. Oh, God has really blessed me. Like that's the most important blessing you can get. Is that what God really wants for you and for me? I mean, does it sound like that's his idea of what's a good life for you? Just a life that's enamored with materialism? We're going to see about that in a second. Joseph, at the end of his life, I mean, when his brothers were afraid after all the awful things that they had done to him, he tells them, do not be afraid, for I am I in God's place. In other words, you know, this really isn't up to me. This is God's call. As for you, you meant evil against me with all these things that you've done. But God meant it for a good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. So therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones. So he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. Again, Joseph went through some awful times. But he understood that something good has come out of that. And of course, it's going to help in the completion of the blessing to Abraham. Job, amazing. What happens to him? I mean, as we've said more than a few times, I cannot even begin to fathom what it was like to face what he faced in life. And here's what he said, though. This is after the initial major setback of losing his family. It says, Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell to the ground and worshiped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. And then what does he do? To me, that which is unthinkable. He blesses God. Which, as we understand, generally the way the word is used, it's a wishing of good things for God. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And through all of this, Job did not sin, nor did he blame God. Now, you look down there at point number 4 in our lesson. We have gone over this idea of what it means to be blessed and realizing that it doesn't mean that everything's just going to go swell for us. And again, for most of us who've lived a while, we know it doesn't always go swell. But we have to try to understand it. Does this mean that God's against us? Well, that wasn't the case with Abraham. It certainly wasn't the case with Joseph. It wasn't the case with Job. So somehow you and I have got to understand that. I want to be blessed by God. Well, it's built upon more the way I'm responding to him and learning to appreciate it. But for what was God asking us in order to receive his blessing? When we read what Jesus taught, well, what was it? So when we're asking God for a blessing, what is it we hope to get out of it? What did Jesus say about that? I don't think it had much to do with luxury and wealth. In fact, notice some of the things that Jesus promised his disciples. A scribe came along and said, teacher, I will follow you wherever I go, wherever you go. Jesus then said, the foxes have holes and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. That promise there, is it going to be blessed to be in a relationship with God? Absolutely. Is it going to be blessed to be in a relationship with Jesus? But he says, understand, it's not about life just going along swimmingly. He said at one time, so the last shall be first and the first last. Things aren't always going to go as we think they should go. The beginning of Luke 12, verse 48. Let everyone, or from everyone who's been given much, much will be required of him. And to whom they entrusted much of him, they will all ask more. Or they will ask all the more. Now, so to be in a relationship with God, if we understand blessing to be all a part of, you know, what it's like to live in a great country and all those kinds of things and to have the things that we have, those are all great and they're good things, and there's no question about it that it comes from God. All the good gifts come from God, but we have to make sure that we don't get so focused on these physical things that we think, well, that's what it means to be blessed by God. Notice what Jesus said about who's going to be blessed. These are the people who are going to be blessed by God, found in Matthew chapter 5. Those who are poor in spirit. Those who mourn. Those who hunger and thirst. Those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. Those who are insulted or even lied about. Through the Beatitudes, through Jesus' New Testament Beatitudes, these are the things that as Jesus is trying to present to you and me, okay, what does it mean to be blessed by God? And what do I have to do in order to be blessed by God? And it's all these things. And generally speaking, we look at these things, and if we had the choice, we'd rather not experience these kinds of things. But Jesus says, these are the kinds of people that are going to be blessed. The good things, and the good things that can only come from God, they are going to come to these people. So what do we mean when we say it is great to be blessed by God? Or we are a nation that is incredibly blessed by God. I understand what we're saying, and I understand what we mean, and I understand certainly the idea that all the great gifts that come to all mankind come from God. But we seek a much higher relationship with God than that. We want to be a part of those who trust in the Lord, those who can accept what Jesus said here, that this is what it means to be blessed, and to think of that as being what it is to which I aspire, rather than just looking at it in a physical sense, or rather than asking God for some sort of miracle to happen. God bless us, make something happen, God. The blessing that comes from God is built upon something so much more than those types of things. And believing that that's the sign that we're in a right relationship with God does not at all jibe with what it says here. So, what does that mean? I mean, when I look at this, I think, okay, if this is what it means to be blessed, I need to figure out what this means. I need to try to understand what these things mean in order to be blessed and considered to be blessed by God. For God to look at me and say, Randy, you're doing okay. Your heart's in the right place. You're not just asking me to take care of you. You want to be in a blessed covenant relationship where you understand that I want to be with you, but you also have to want to be with me. And there are certain things that you must accept in order to be blessed. Now, these things, in some ways, are very consistent with some of these beatitudes that are found in the Old Testament. Because the people were told, just be faithful to God no matter what happens. You'll be okay. And in essence, this is what Jesus is saying. You'll be blessed even if you are being persecuted. Even if you are being insulted. You will be blessed. Why? Because that's what God says. If you found the mythical genie inside a lamp, for what would you wish? I suspect for most of us, it would probably be something different depending on what age that we are. I suspect for those of us who are a little bit older, though, even after we've made our wish, we probably would be wondering if what we thought was really the ultimate and what was going to make us be blessed or be happy. I think we'd start wondering, well, is that really right? You know, because we probably experienced a lot of things that we expected great things from, that we thought was really going to make our lives full, and it didn't work out that way. Because most of the things that come out of that kind of a, quote, wish in that mythology, generally people ask for something physical. And it usually has to do with treasures and money. But we've been studying in Ecclesiastes, the guy who wrote that. He said, I had all that. It didn't do anything for me. It's all vanity. And again, when we start thinking about what's really going to make me have this experience of being blessed, the numbers in our bank account have very little to do with that. How well everything is going on in our life really has very little to do with that. It's just tangential. Because God wants me to be blessed, not with all the treasures of the world. He wants me to be blessed by understanding that I can be blessed and be the kind of person that's described right there. And that's what we really should strive to understand. You want to be blessed by God? Does God bless us? Sure. Are those blessings somewhat physical in nature at times? Absolutely. But what's the blessing that really matters? What's the blessing that's got true teeth in it? It comes to those who fear and who trust the Lord and who can accept a blessing, knowing that this is how I get it. This is where it really comes true and real in my life. Thanks for listening. I really do appreciate it. We are very, very blessed, aren't we? And it's got nothing to do with the kind of car we drive or how nice our house is. You know that. You who have entrusted your sinful life, as Scott was saying, to Christ. You and I know that. But if you're not a Christian, I want you to understand that that kind of stuff has a momentary sense of pleasantry, but it's nothing like what the Lord has planned for you and for me. And that's the blessing he's describing in Matthew chapter 5. We'll look more into that next time. If you want to be a Christian and take within you the ultimate blessing of forgiveness, of redemption and being taken back by God, we can help you do that this morning if you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you understand that you should desire to be baptized. We can assist you in that this very morning. If we can help, please come as we stand and sing. Larry.